It's the Pat Kenny Show. It's Anton in for Pat. It's the Friday Forum. With me is Fionnán Sheehan, Ireland editor at the Irish Independent, Roisin Shortall, TD, Social Democrats TD for Dublin North West, and Timmy Dooley, Fianna Fáil senator for Clare. We have much to discuss, starting with the Trump-Biden debate from last night. A lot of texts saying Jill Biden is the problem. She wants to be first lady again. If the Democrats don't dump Joe Biden, it'll be a landslide for Trump. However you might have predicted, Fionnán, that this debate would go, you wouldn't have predicted that the discussions in media in America and around the world would be, can Biden remain on the ticket?
Well, actually, go back 40 years and this type of thing was happening with Reagan back in 84 after a first debate where he faltered. And he came out in the second debate. He knocked it out of the ballpark against Walter Mondale. There was question marks over Reagan being in his 70s. Was he fully lucid and so on and so forth? And he came out with a classic soundbite. He said, I'll not make age an issue of this campaign. I'm not going to exploit for political purposes my opponent's youth and inexperience. And it was brilliant. It was sharp. It was witty. It was that great classic, the Gipper one-liner. And it ended the debate. Joe Biden did the complete opposite last night. He made everything now. The entire campaign is going to be about his age, his ability to carry out his role now and into the future, and with, you'd have to say, with some justification.
And it is only, one assumes, going to get worse, because Roisin Shortall, what we saw last night was the full 90 minutes of the debate and the sort of the analysis thereafter. But the nature of Joe Biden's faltering will feed months of online clips and social media and the Trump campaign mill.
Absolutely, and it wasn't just one or two, you know, that he could maybe justify or people might forget about. There were several gaffes made by him. And also, I mean, his difficulty in remembering kind of what he was talking about and all of that. It was a disaster, I think. And there were always big question marks over his mental capacity due to you know, was their kind of failing mental capacity. They were the big question marks about him. And you would imagine, given the level of preparation that there was, and apparently that was enormous, and they had mocked up the kind of setting and months of preparation, and it was just disastrous, the whole thing. You would despair, though, wouldn't you? I mean, if this is the best that the United States can throw up, Biden and Trump, you would just wonder where we're going in all of this. I think there will be huge pressure on now to come up with another candidate. Having handled this first debate so badly, I think the pressure will be such in the next debate that it's very hard to see him getting through it.
It's also, regardless of comparing him to Trump, if you compared him to Joe Biden of 4 years ago, the diminution in debate skill is phenomenal.
Yeah, it's not about age, Anton. It's about mental capacity, or mental agility. Throughout every debate, regardless of age, people will make small gaffes. They'll forget a name or they'll get a number wrong, and a lot will be made out of it. But I just think any analysis, and I didn't see the debate, but I looked at some of the clips and I read the coverage this morning. Watching some of the clips, he just started to jumble words. It was word soup at time. And, you know, you had Trump there, who's not a lot younger than him, but looked fresh, looked sharp, looked that he was ready to fight for his country. And we all know what that means. But unfortunately, it's very clear that Joe Biden is failing mentally.
And
you've seen that over the 4 years. It has deteriorated rapidly, and I think by the time we get to the election date, it may even have deteriorated to a greater extent.
And just for people who didn't see it, because there is a tendency to say, will you focus on the policy issues and not on the apparently shallow issues of performance? But the reality was that the defining characteristic of this debate was Joe Biden's incapacity to remain coherent for large
sections. Yeah, I think that's the big issue, and you didn't feel that the policies that were being espoused by the Democratic Party were necessarily his policies, or that he had any great input into them, or that he was able to articulately deliver to the American people in the way that he has been so good at, because he has this folksy character that has often been able to take complex issues and deliver the sound bites in a careful and calculated way that the average American gets and likes and appreciates, and they see him as, you know, that sort of elder gentleman with a really good heart, with a really good vision for America that cares about people. Trump presents the opposite, quite frankly.
There's a quite brilliant attack ad out from the Trump campaign this morning, and all it is clips of Joe Biden. There's nothing factually inaccurate. Mm. There's no lies. There's no misstatements made in it at all. Bit of old sinister, haunting music in the background. That's all it is. And with the CNN logo in the background, and it's sending out a subliminal message. Oh, this was him on home turf, and he still couldn't do it.
Yeah,
it'll be very interesting to see what happens.
What you were saying there to me, like, I think there was, for many, many Americans, there was always an issue of trust there in Biden. Yeah. You could trust him.
Yeah.
He was sound. After last night's performance, I mean, how could you have confidence in his ability to run the country?
Let's bring it to issues closer to home. And I'll start with our two politicians on the forum. I should say we have Timmy Dooley, who's Senator for Clare, for Fianna Fáil, Fionnán Sheehan, Ireland editor for The Independent, and Roisin Shortall, Social Democrats TD for Dublin North West. The bomb threat at the Taoiseach's home during the week, there has been widespread and almost universal condemnation of the fact that it happened. You are both politicians and have been for a long time. Has it become a more dangerous job to hold? Has it become a more threatening environment to work in? Is this part of a pattern?
I think there's a sinister element emerging, mainly promulgated on social media. And people sort of take it upon themselves to make these threats. The only thing that can be said about any of them to date, they're not orchestrated or organised by any particular group. So they seem to be, to use that American term, a kind of a lone wolf exercise. In some cases, there are individuals who have some personal issues. Or we saw the threat that was made to the Minister for Justice recently.
But individuals can do people real harm.
Oh no, there's no doubt about that, and it becomes more difficult from the Gardaí's perspective to try to ensure that they don't become a factual reality, or that they don't have some manifestation at a stage. But there's no doubt that the political environment, or maybe just culturally, there is a change where people feel that they can make threats like this. Whether or not they escalate to
do you feel it is different doing the day to day job of being
very much so? You see it in terms of the emails that you get, the kind of social media things that are said by anonymous accounts about you. You know, people will regularly say that somebody should be taken out, and that's propagated on social media. And maybe some of the social media companies don't do enough to try to filter out these people. I always think when you provide an opportunity for people to speak anonymously, it has this domino effect where others who may be challenged in some way see it as, well, if others are saying it, it's okay for us. At some point, it cascades down to perhaps somebody taking the ultimate action and sort of following through on one of these threats.
What do you think, Roisin? Are you finding the same?
Yeah, I mean, public protest is fine, but I think you have to draw the line when politicians' house and home is targeted. And when those kind of protests come to your family home, I remember when my children were very young, it was the time of the Sea Case, and there were a couple of different protests outside my house. And it's like, it's horrible when it happens, and it does make you think, is it worth it? And, you know,
what do you do during it? I mean, because you can't ignore it if there's people outside your front door screaming. Do you just lock yourself in
the
room?
I was actually in the Dáil at the time.
So it was your family who had to go through
it? My family were at home. And I mean, that's absolutely out of bounds, I believe. It causes huge upset, and it's just very disturbing. And, you know, I had to wonder there a few weeks ago when the protests were outside Roderick O'Gorman's home. And the Taoiseach made the point during the week that masked men coming along to your home is not protest. And you just have to wonder, I mean, what is the advice given to Gardaí to do that? We saw at the time at Roderick O'Gorman's home, there were two squad cars and the guards sitting in the cars. I mean, is it legitimate for masked men to go to anybody's home and essentially threaten them? And I think this is part of a bigger issue about the coarsening of public engagement generally, and I think it is fueled by the internet and that kind of echo chamber that's there, that anybody can go on the internet and on Twitter and say whatever they like about.
But the social media giants are giving two fingers to government every
absolutely,
time they're asked.
Yeah. And I really think there's a role for government to step in here and introduce regulation, both in terms of identity.
Yeah.
That you like, it shouldn't be the case that anybody can go on social media and say anything they like. against anyone. I mean, you know, that doesn't happen in any other walk of life. And there is an issue about that, but there's also an issue about the kinds of things that are said on social media as well. I was listening to a presentation given by young people from Jigsaw during the week. And I mean, they were pointing the finger at their parents' generation for allowing this to happen. One young person, an 18-year-old, made the point that when she got her first iPhone, that was when her childhood ended. Mm. And that was at 13. Now, young people themselves are identifying this as an issue. And I think it's time that, you know, those in government and in politics took on that issue.
And the real difficulty is when government talks about introducing anything around hate speech, you have a group both within the Dáil and outside who present this as somehow a censorship or somehow curtailing free speech, when in truth it suits a certain group within politics, principally with right-wing and in some cases far right-wing ideology, who want to use the internet to stir up negativity towards the government for their own interests. It's a disrupting effect. And it's really dangerous. And I think we'll have to challenge that because, okay, so it's the free speech argument. But in truth, we all understand and know the importance of free speech. But as Roisin has identified, there is a line and we've got to draw that line.
But there's always been a difference between free speech and free publication. Fionnán, if you decided to start writing some of this in The Independent, you get a very different reaction than Twitter does.
Yeah,
Facebook does.
I'm always interested when I hear statements about, you know, social media and how we need to protect democracy and so on as a vote, and yet the single biggest hindrance to free speech in this society is our defamation laws, which prevent us. And I can cite examples from the last year on very high profile stories around our planning system, around RTE, where things could not be published that we regarded as in the public interest, and that was because of the defamation laws. I think in this case, this is about intimidation. It's about a threat to democracy. And this state has stood up to those threats in the past in the wake of the Civil War. We did have attacks on TDs, on their homes, TDs killed on the way into the Dáil. During the Troubles, we had the same. We only had the 50th anniversary of Billy Fox's murder recently. So the public are looking to government and the state to respond here. I'm not really seeing it coming. Mm-hmm. There seems to be this softly approach still from the Garda Síochána, which I can't understand.
If you want to get in touch, 53106 at a cost of 30 cent or 087 1400 106. You mentioned RTE and the reporting that you wanted to bring to bear that you were somewhat restrained in. It is worth reminding ourselves that it was through your good offices that much of RTE's initial problems emerged into the public gaze. We're a little over a year on and we have had the 5-year plan, which ostensibly is the ticket to cash that RTE has been looking for. Are there problems all behind
the cash call, as we call it?
The cash call.
Yeah, I think ultimately we're still what was missing from the documentation this week, a balance sheet. I mean, there wasn't a single figure that I could see on income anywhere, either on commercial income or public income. So until government come back and make a statement one way or another, I think that's fine. There are arguments on both sides, but ultimately there is agreement. There has to be public funding one way or another, whether that is the existing licence fee, a broadcasting levy or direct public exchequer funding, and how much that will be, how that will be solidified, and then how it will be divvied up as well, because I think the debate has moved on now, where it's basically RTE are the only people in town who deliver public service broadcasting. I would argue you're doing the same here in Newstalk on a daily basis, but that, you know, then you can have the debate about what's commercial and what's semi-commercial and so on and so forth. And everything that was coming out this week, I have to say, I wasn't convinced by all of it. The stuff about, oh, we're outsourcing Fair City, I was kind of going, okay, really, is this Lyric FM all over again? Is this another, we're going to do this, it's very dramatic, there'll be a backlash and it won't happen.
And just give us our money, please, while we're at it. Yeah. Now, on the topic of getting the money, Roisin, there is a slightly odd situation that has developed organically through all of this, which is the one thing that everybody has agreed on is that we can't have political influence in and over RTE. Meanwhile, we have the greatest political influence over RTE that we have ever had, because they now have a begging bowl permanently in front of the minister doing whatever she wants them to do. This can't continue.
No, it can't. And, I mean, there have been more than one occasion where you would say RTE has gone very lightly there, because they're waiting to hear about the cash injection. And this is, of course, about so much more than cash. And that's what puzzled me during the week there with the so-called plan from RTE. I mean, it actually didn't deal with any of the issues that were before the committee there about the poor governance, the culture that was there, the sense of entitlement, all of those things that led to that excess that we heard about last year. So why aren't we dealing with those issues now?
Now, they may say that they had a separate governance analysis report that was out a couple of weeks ago, which covered much of, well, it covered some of that.
Very little of it, in my view, it has to be said. But like, where is the policy for public sector broadcasting coming from? We haven't heard that from government. That should be coming from the minister and from the wider government, not from RTE. And it's been reduced down to just talking about cash. We'll cut, you know, certain things here and you give us the cash then. And, you know, why isn't the minister setting out a strategy, a vision for public sector broadcasting? And on the basis of that, then, how that's going to be funded. But, you know, this has been reduced down to just about the money, and it's so much more important than that. Of course, we have been waiting over a decade now for that strategy for public service broadcasting.
And of course, it was 2013 when Pat Rabbitt had a memo before Cabinet.
Yeah,
in relation
that's right.
To
more than a decade. And yeah, then from the RTE's point of view, I mean, what are they talking about, really? You know, outsourcing things? What's the savings going to be there? Does it make sense to outsource, for example, the flagship light entertainment programme, The Late Late? I mean, why would they do that? Whatever about a you know, drama series, doing that on The Late Late Show. But there's so much more to be addressed and reformed within RTE. And I would say it's the government's responsibility to do that. It's about government policy in relation to this.
Unfortunately, there is an awful lot that I want to get through, so we won't dwell much further on RTE, because Timmy Dooley undoubtedly has the solution to the Aer Lingus and IALPA problem.
Wouldn't I love to? I just think a little bit of common sense has to be brought to bear here. I think there's a lot of people looking on, seeing the very significant salaries that Aer Lingus pilots are paid. Nobody is undermining or underestimating the quality of the work that they do, the kind of pressure that they're under. That's all taken as a given. But I think it's for some who are unable now to take their holidays this weekend with their families, people on the average industrial wage who've been saving consistently for that holiday, and then to see it all go up in smoke because pilots are holding out for a
24%. But now you've seen an awful lot of IR problems. You've seen an awful lot of negotiations,
whether it
be benchmarking or anything else. Yeah, yeah. Have you ever seen one where every time the two parties are brought closer together, it gets worse?
Yeah, you usually do in the early stages, but we're well into it now. And when the quantum of money that's required is a 24% increase, when other staff within Aer Lingus have taken 12.5%, there seems to be a long ways between reality and where it's going. And you know, to go from 24% back to 22% as some kind of a compromise doesn't suggest to me that there's a solution anytime soon. But it is really damaging to the Irish economy. It's damaging to tourism interests. And it's just damaging to families who are looking forward to getting a bit of a break after a long winter. And I think we just need a bit of common sense here.
Any chance of the common sense, Roisin? Sorry, Timmy.
Not too much sign of it. And I mean, I couldn't help thinking last night when the news came out of the talks breaking down, the thousands of people whose hearts must have sank and panic set in. Like, you know, they really need to get a grip, both sides here. If we're talking about the difference between 12.5% and 24%, there must be a halfway point. And there are so many different scales involved in this and so many different allowances. It must be possible to hammer out an agreement on it. Now, it seems the two sides are so far apart, and you say getting further apart. I think there's a lot of ego here as well. And at this point, I think it looks unlikely that the two sides can reach an agreement themselves, and it's time for the Labour Court to get involved. You need a third party.
Although they gave it a fair shot there this week and got nowhere.
But you need, well, sorry, what they said was that the action wasn't to escalate, and they also said they were available. Now, you know, Aer Lingus has now asked to go in, and it's up to IALPA force, I think, to do the same. But we can't continue. There's enormous damage being done by this. And, you know, it's that thing of confidence again. You know, if you were planning to go away in a month's time, would you book Aer Lingus? So huge potential for damage. Time for them to use the mechanisms that are there.
One final thing before we go. Fionnán, Jack Chambers, explain what happened there. How did everything come up roses for Jack so quickly?
Master stroke by Micheál Martin. I mean, like, you know, he has his greatest enemy on a local national level has been promoted to Brussels. He's now in Stahl, the fella who's only in there a wet week. Mighty altogether. Look, Jack was a bright lad when he entered politics. This is quite a dramatic ascent, one would have to say. Now, at the same time, you know, we were talking, Michael Collins was the judge, right? Now, curiously, the other two ministers who were in their early 30s when they became ministers of finance were Ernest Bligh and John Bruton. And both went down in infamy for other reasons in relation to budgets that they introduced. So Jack has 3 months now to make sure he doesn't go down the same list.
If Jack Chambers had remained in his original career and gone on to be a doctor, he could well be performing brain surgery. He could well be performing heart surgery at this stage, and nobody would question it. So just because he's 33, I mean, there was a time when most of the cabinet were of that age.
I don't think people are questioning his age. I think people are questioning leapfrogging the intervening steps that we all assume would occur. He went very high, very fast, very quickly.
He's a talented young man who has worked really hard.
Very much experience. That's the point. It's not his age.
I accept that, and he's been around the cabinet. I mean, I know Jack Chambers a long time. I know him since he was back in Ogre Fianna Fáil. He has been involved in every element of the party. He knows politics.
He's
never
been in charge of any government department, let alone the Department of Finance. And like finance is just so different. Do you know, it's different if he was going in to say the Department of Education and that's all he has to look after.
Finance is a big
finance is about being in charge of every other department.
Jack Chambers, as I do, for as long as I do, he has more than the capacity and the capability to be an excellent Minister for Finance, and I know he will be.
I'm sure Pascal Dunne will be delighted to be back as Minister for Finance for the next 3 months anyway. It'll be fine. Don't worry about it.
I'm sure you all want to get ready to go to Taylor Swift or whatever you have planned for the weekend, so we will call it quits.
As far away from it as possible.
Timmy Dooley, Fianna Fáil Senator for Clare, Roisin Shortall, TD, Social Democrats, TD for Dublin North West, and Fionnán Sheehan, Ireland Editor at the Irish Independent. Thank you all very much. Likewise, thank you to the entire team on the Pat Kenny Show for the hospitality and support over the week. Editor Emer Bradley, producer Aidan McKelvey, researchers Jessica Woodlock and Megan O'Halloran, and broadcast assistant Anne-Marie Kane. Don't forget, if you missed anything on the show, you can listen back. All of our items are uploaded as podcasts that you can listen to on the News Talk app powered by Go Loud.
American Giant makes great clothing, sweatshirts, jeans, and more right here in the U.S. Visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order with code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.